Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Jean Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, where we talk about wills and trusts and Medicaid and community Medicaid and
long-term care.
Long-term care.
Planning and all that good stuff.
And how to stay out of the rain.
Well, and it is a call-in show, so you can give us a call. You can ask your questions. It's 518-476-5900, and we would love to hear from you.
We do love to hear from you because it always... It's nice to know what people are thinking and what questions they have. And, you know, it's great to be anonymous, too, right, when you're on the radio.
Well, I've met people who listen to the radio and they say that they listen, but they're afraid to call in.
Oh, yeah.
People are a little
afraid.
Shy.
It's only us. It's
I know.
Only us, yeah.
Yeah, like you can call in. It's fine.
There's a call right now. Hang on, I'll get it.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because we were at a conference this week and I actually had a couple professionals that said that they listened to the show, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, because typically we, you know, it's for everybody, obviously, right? But that was kind of cool to hear. And they said they always get really great information from us. So
that is really
nice
to hear. Yeah, that's great. So we were at a conference this week and talking about Medicaid. But I do think we have a call coming in, so I'll have to hold off on
that. Get-go.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, I about fell out of my chair there. I don't know why. Anyway, hey, Paula is on the line. Good morning, Paula.
Hi, Paula.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question.
Okay.
My mom passed away in March and left a will. She also had 10 living children and 30-some grandkids. I don't know how many greats, but anyhow, she appointed one of my nieces, one of her granddaughters, executive.
Mm-hmm.
Is she required to read the will or have it read? It was filed in a lawyer's office, yes. Mm-hmm. Is she required to read this will? Because she said she told us there'd be no reading of the will because I can't afford a lawyer.
Okay. That's a little strange.
Yeah.
I mean, there isn't always a formal reading of the will, but there should be a communication as to what the will says. You should actually receive a copy of it. In order for your niece to probate the will, she has to file it with court, and you all have to get notice of that.
Okay.
So has that, I don't know if that's happened
because
yet.
Because the house was with a mortgage was left to my brother and the granddaughter, who's executive of the will, also, as executive of the will, was she required to take care of her final expenses? There was not enough life insurance to bury my mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if there is an estate, the estate needs to pay those expenses. So basically, this does need to go, you know, through the courts. The will needs to be filed, and you need to receive the notice, and then you can get more information after that.
Okay.
You know, she should be sharing that information with you.
Right. Okay. Well, that's what we got. There is a will, and I can't afford a lawyer to have it read.
Mm. Yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense. So, you know, you need to, I guess, get a little more information. If you want to give our office a call on Monday, I could talk to you about how you could find out if something has been filed with the courts. That's what you're going to need to do next. Okay.
Okay, I know she hasn't done any of that. I know that for a fact.
Okay, well, yeah. So I don't know. We can talk. She needs to do that before she can go forward with doing anything with the estate.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate.
Okay, you're welcome. So good. So we did get a call. Yes.
Right. Well, and it's always interesting because that question comes up a lot, right? Or that statement because the TV.
Yes.
You know, we always hear,
you
know, we're going to gather and have a reading of the will. And
right.
I know at one point, like Dave said, I don't think I've never done that in my multi-decade career. That's such a misnomer that people gather
right.
And that there's an actual
simply
official...
added for drama in the plot. That's
right.
Not real.
Right.
That's right. I've never done that either. there.
So, I mean, right. It's as simple as, you know, needing to file. And so, that, I mean, I guess that's a good question, Jay Marie. Do you actually need, like, if it's pretty simple and straightforward, mm-hmm. right? Like, she right. said there was a house. Mm-hmm. Like, do you really have to utilize an attorney? Like, it just really is going down to the court and saying, I have this document. I have right. a will. I need to you know, probate yeah. it.
Generally, probate, unless it's a small estate, right. which is something that's under $50,000, and the court can give you those forms, and you can probably figure that out on your own, uh-huh. but a full probate, I don't think you should do on your own.
Right.
It's much more complicated.
Complicated, yeah.
Right. So, and it's not just filing the will. You have to file a probate petition. You have to see who gets notice.
Right.
Everyone has to get noticed, so it's a little complicated.
Yeah, right. That's why you guys always say try to avoid probate.
Yes,
well, exactly. Yeah,
I do.
And I mean, and even in circumstances where, you know, people feel like, well, I don't have a lot, but, you know, mm-hmm. she had a home, she had a house that she owned, and even though there was a mortgage left on it and still had it, like, it's mm-hmm. still an asset.
It's still an asset, and the house is even if the value of the house after the mortgage is under $50,000. For real estate, you need to do a full probate.
Yeah.
So whenever there's a house involved, you do need to have a lawyer involved.
Right.
Because you need to do a full probate, and you need a lawyer to transfer title on the deed.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that needs to...
Right.
You can't really handle that on your own.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a great question. And it is pretty confusing stuff. And, you know, that's why it's so important to plan.
That's right. Although we don't have a formal reading of the will, you know, if you're the child, the beneficiary, you should get a copy of the will.
Okay.
And you are entitled to that. And yeah. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting.
See, I always learn stuff, you know, because a lot of what I do is all of the, you know, helping folks navigate and long-term care planning and, mm-hmm. you know, just looking at the road ahead,
yes.
and I know enough to say to people, like, it is really super important to even, you know, when you don't think you have anything. And we talk to so many groups all over and mm-hmm. Different demographics and different, you know, even economic, mm-hmm. you know, backgrounds. And always there's someone who says, wow, I didn't realize I should probably do that. You know, so even right. when you think you don't have anything or of importance, it still is super important to at least meet with somebody to make sure that kind of have your ducks in a row for a rainy day.
Right, right, true, because you may still need a small estate. You may still need to go to court if you don't have things set up properly.
Right.
And there's some very easy fixes to that. I mean, mainly put someone on your bank account with you or do a beneficiary on your bank account.
Sure.
Or the one I've gotten asked twice this week, which is a safe deposit box.
Right.
If you're not on the safe deposit box, that gets frozen.
Yeah.
Right. And then no one can get
it. It took you a long time to get it open.
That's
yeah.
right.
To a friend of mine, yeah.
Yeah, you have to get the court order to get it open.
I think it went almost a year before they could open it mm-hmm. up, yeah.
Right.
there was nothing in it.
Oh, I know. Sometimes it's, very...
Yeah.
We anti-coffee.
We have it just for the the drama of the mystery. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's kind of like the ultimate wah-wah-wah, you know.
Right, you have a court order. Usually there's someone from the bank. You're all standing around the box, yeah. and that's all.
And there it is.
And nothing.
Wow, okay. So the other, you know, common thing that I think I hear a lot when talking to people is also sort of the powers of each of the documents we do, right? And right. a lot of times somebody will say to me, I have power of attorney. Well, okay, that's great, but really the power of attorney is only your financial document. It's not really, you're not making decisions for a person mm-hmm. just because you've got power of attorney, right? It's really designed mm-hmm. for that financial. Now, from the perspective of, you know, I work a lot with assisted living facilities and things like that. And mm-hmm. and if somebody's going to sign documents
right.
for an individual to enter a facility, yes, you need to have power of attorney because that's mm-hmm. a financial document. You know, you're right. making a financial agreement with the assisted living. But when it comes to the care component, right, Mm-hmm. That's the healthcare proxy.
Yes.
Right? The healthcare proxy, that's not the power of attorney. That's making those decisions about doctors and hospice and all those kinds of things. That really does need to be the healthcare proxy that's been appointed to make those healthcare decisions. And why it's so important, and then having those conversations. And I think I run into this far more, particularly as people age, and, you know, they may say, these are not things that I want, and having those, needing to have the conversations around that.
Well, I'm sure, as you've seen, I've seen a lot, that people don't necessarily pick their spouse, right? Or their oldest child, like who you would think normally, to be their healthcare proxy.
Right.
You know, as you get, you know, think more about what you want, you really have to pick the person who's most aligned with your thoughts, who's going to really do what you want.
100%. You know, well, because it can be a burdensome role for somebody. You know, we're dealing with a particularly interesting family right now, right, where things have sort of swapped around. And that was sort of one of the things that I was thinking about this morning, was when it comes to someone who does have a diagnosis of dementia and even in a, you know, mild cognitive impairment status, like, how do you really evaluate somebody for that competence piece, or that you know, ability to still continue to make those decisions for themselves?
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's not necessarily a medical right standard. It's a legal standard to meet with the person, and the lawyer has to ask questions and figure out if they have capacity. There's certain capacity to sign a will. That's right. Like last set. To sign a will, you need to know basically what the size of your estate is, what your assets are.
Okay.
And then I love this phrase, the natural objects of your bounty.
Okay.
So what does that mean? So that means who would inherit the property if you didn't have a will, right? Like the natural. So, okay, my children, right? Mm-hmm. So I need to know and remember, okay, I have two sons, right? And I can choose to leave it to them or not, but I need to know that's what would normally happen, right?
Okay.
And then I know I have a house and a bank account, right? So if I kind of know those basic facts, and I can say, all right, I'm going to leave it, you know, half to my kids, half to my grandkids, you know, I can make that choice.
Okay.
Right. And that can be even if I have dementia or Alzheimer's or a cognitive impairment, because those may affect memory, but not my decision about the will right in that moment.
Okay.
So it's interesting. Sometimes people do have some capacity to do that, but may not, you know, be able to do some other things for themselves.
Right. Well, and we run into it too, where they may not have the ability to manage their finances on a daily basis, right?
Right.
But overall, they have the understanding of, just like you said, like where they want things to go, who they want to participate in those decisions.
Yeah.
And then also have the opportunity to change those things, because, I mean, maybe they've appointed somebody and that person's really not, even though they feel like they may be acting in the best interest and
that's
doing
right.
things their way, it may not be how the individual really does want things. And so it gets a little sticky sometimes.
Right. So that goes to the question of, you know, if you're doing a power of attorney or a healthcare proxy, do you have the ability to change that?
Right.
And yeah, I mean, you can say, I don't want that person to do it anymore. I want someone else to handle it for me.
Right.
And there doesn't have to be, like you said, any reason. The person could be doing a fine job, but you can change your mind. Right?
Yeah.
And if you still have the capacity to vote, you know, verbalize that, you can change who handles things for
right.
you.
And I think that's important for people to understand and people to know, because, you know, just because you're named as that, right? Like
right.
as a power of attorney or healthcare proxy, it doesn't allow you to just kind of come in and bulldoze.
That's right. That's right.
So,
and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And we're at the break now. We'll be right back after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. And you can be our second caller of the show at 518-476-5900. Any questions you have, wills, we were just talking about wills, powers of attorney, healthcare proxies. We have Kim here, who is our aging life care manager. And so if you have any questions about, you know, long-term care, finding care for your parents or your loved ones, now's the time to call and ask Kim a question.
Yeah.
She has many great resources to help you.
Yeah, and as of late, it's been really interesting. I've been doing a lot of long-term care insurance navigation.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, really, like, a lot. It's been interesting. And I love doing stuff like that because it's a little bit new of challenge, right? And I learn something every time I go in and help folks do that. But it's super important, particularly if you have a long-term care insurance policy, to take it out and dust it off and understand sort of the parameters around it. You know, one of the folks we're working with, actually the parents forgot that they had long-term care insurance because they had purchased it so long ago.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that happening, though.
Yeah,
yeah, right. And, you know, the kids just... They sort of stumbled upon it when they were...
Yeah, the kids may not have known that the parents
Right, when they were... Well, and this kind of goes back to having conversations, right?
Right.
And talking to your people that you're looking to kind of manage things for you so that they can understand. One of the tools that we have that I love is, you know, we have our booklet that says, you know, what people should know.
Right.
And it goes through everything from, you know, a family tree to... all of your insurance policies, you know, bank accounts, that sort of thing. And even if you don't share it at the time you fill it out, it's just great to have it tucked somewhere so that when people are going through things that they can find it and then it's really accessible. You know, like yesterday we had our Medicaid meeting and Mike, one of our paralegals, was talking about, you know, the kids are just still finding accounts
assets,
and finding
right.
things, and you know, as soon as they think they're ready to file an application, they find more, you know, and that's hard because it really leaves an individual in limbo of being able to make a good decision or the ability to kind of find what's most appropriate, because we don't always know how we can pay for things, and if we think we're going down one path and then all of a sudden, oh geez, here's, you know, and it affects how we're able to be, you know, plan and advise folks too. So it's just really important to kind of try to do that. But like the family I was just talking about, they've been paying privately for care for almost 2.5 years.
That's a lot of money.
Wow.
It's a lot of money.
That's a lot
and
of money.
Their long-term care policy is really good.
Oh no. Oh,
you know, boy. and would wow. really would oh. have captured a lot of that. And okay. of course, you know, they've been spending down assets and, you know, they find this long-term care policy, and of course the long-term care policy has it's got a pretty hefty elimination period. And to the point, like a lot of times when people did those long-term care policies, they were willing to, because they had some asset base, right? So they're, in order to drive the premium down, they decided that it's okay for me to pay privately for 180 days, right? Because
right.
I'll still have assets left. But now, they've spent 2.5 years paying for all of this, and now they have to, on top of it, pay for another, you know, get through the elimination period. Like, there's no skirting around that. Like, the elimination period is the elimination period regardless.
That's a tough one.
So it's really heartbreaking to see. It's like, oh, gosh, you know, if we had only known sooner.
Right. If you have a long-term care insurance policy, make sure your kids know about
it. I mean, and then you understand sort of what the parameters are around it because
And it's not always easy to get those claims approved.
It's so not.
Sometimes you do need a professional's help to navigate the paperwork, make sure you meet all the qualifications the, you know, medically and such, and then in order to get your payment started.
Right.
And then each policy is different about, you know, whether you have, how you pay people. It's an agency or not, or whether you can pay them directly.
Right. And you can do, you know, depending on geographic, sometimes in lack of staff, we have the ability to say that, well, we've got staff, but they're sort of licensed independents is mm-hmm. what they're called. And, mm-hmm. you know, more and more policies are allowing that, or allowing having what we would normally call an informal support be able mm-hmm. to be paid for the care that they're providing because of the lack of resources in different communities. Mm-hmm. And those are all things that we help navigate. And, you know, even just working with folks to help them understand, like, what services are available mm-hmm. through their policy. You know, I saw something interesting, you know, a few months ago, was sitting down with somebody and, yeah, they had nursing home, but their home care was only, it wasn't even 50% of their nursing home benefits. Mm-hmm. And of course, who wants to go to the nursing home, right?
Right.
And so it limited what the home care was going to pay through the long-term care insurance, but we were able to then do a community Medicaid application
right.
because that's been the other thing is people feel like if they have long-term care insurance, they're not going to be eligible for Medicaid, right? But we can do those two things together.
You can do both if you're, if your long-term care insurance isn't paying everything.
Right.
There's a gap. You can also use Medicaid
right.
to fill in the gap.
And I think that's sort of a common myth that people have because they think that those two programs aren't going to work together.
So let's go back a little bit. We're talking in our little expert language over here. can you go over what an elimination period is for people? I mean, I know. Yeah.
Right.
You may even know, John, because you're on the show a while. But let's explain.
No, but I want to hear this.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just the number of days that you have to pay out of pocket for mm-hmm. your services before the long-term care insurance will pay, mm-hmm. you know? So, and also the other thing that's interesting to know about that is mm-hmm. how the language reads, whether it's calendar days or mm-hmm. dates of service. Mm-hmm. And that makes a big difference because generally calendar days just means as long as you're receiving 1 or 2 days within a 7-day period, they're going to count it as a week. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're going to count it as 7 days. Mm-hmm. If it's dates of service, mm-hmm. you have to get through each individual and it's a 90-day policy. You have to get through 90 services mm-hmm. before it's going to be activated. And if you're only getting 1 or 2 days a week, 90 of those is going to take a really long time to get through.
Okay.
And care is expensive, right? So if you're paying out of pocket for that and you're not starting your policy until you're getting, you know, 30 to 40 hours a week or 24/7, as was the case with the folks that had been paying out of their pocket for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, 24-hour care is around $17,000 a month.
Right. You know, it's as expensive as a nursing home.
Super expensive.
Right. Oh,
and so,
so the elimination period is kind of like a deductible on your health insurance.
Right.
And you, when you buy it, you can choose different levels, right? Where you can make the premium cheaper if you're quote unquote deductible is higher.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that sounds good. And then when it comes to doing that, you need the money to pay privately for all that time until your insurance starts.
Right.
And that's fine, but you need to understand that and remember that when you're planning.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's a lot of folks don't understand too about their policy, and I hear this more often than not, is you find that they have long-term care insurance and it's like, okay, look, great. Like, let's kind of start working on that. Well, I'm saving it. Okay, what are you saving it for? Well, when I really need it. And I'm like, well, you have an event now and we're entering the long-term care world. And so kind of, because there's
no point in saving it.
Well, but they feel like you know, I've been paying for so long, and I want to save it for when things get really expensive, mm-hmm. sort of thing. But then when yes. I explained to them, well, your policy, most policies that were written have something that's called a waiver of premium.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that once you start using your policy, once you become eligible, right, mm-hmm. to start that elimination period, you no longer have to pay your that premium.
Which is good. It can be a big savings.
Absolutely.
Those premiums have been going up every year.
Right.
And as we've talked about before, some people either choose to drop their policy yeah. or reduce their benefits because the premiums are so high.
Right.
And if you've been paying that premium for a long time, that's not always a wise decision, you know,
right.
to do
right.
that.
Right. So, you know, there are lots of those little nuances that it's really great to come in and sit down, you know, and then, you know, one of the other things that we've been doing is sort of like pre-claims assessment. If somebody's mm-hmm. thinking, like, let's look and see where you're eligible mm-hmm. for this. And these are sort of the things that we're going to focus on when the assessments are done and
right.
when we have to have the physicians, you know, your doctor has to fill out a form, but let's make sure he fills it out correctly.
Because mm-hmm.
The doctor doesn't always know, right, how you're operating
right.
at home and the things that you really need assistance with. And then, again, when people are entering into maybe an assisted living situation, mm-hmm. It used to be back in the day that if you went to an assisted living, your long-term care insurance would automatically pay for it.
Right.
Because it was assumed that
that's
by receiving that level of care, you were in assisted living. But that's not true anymore.
No. I was thinking of a case we had a while ago where we had to work with the assisted living mm-hmm. facility to fill out the paperwork correctly to
yep.
get it paid.
Yep. Because a lot of times they think, oh, we don't really do that much for Mrs. Smith.
Right.
But when you really pull back all of the layers and you mm-hmm. look at what Mrs. Smith is getting at the assisted living,
mm-hmm.
and if she were at home, independent, how different it is, it's kind of mm-hmm. like, oh, yes, we are providing those services. It's just not as apparent as it would be because mm-hmm. Mrs. Smith is actually doing pretty good. But, you know, sometimes she comes out and she's wearing two different shoes, or maybe her shirt's inside out, or maybe, you know,
she doesn't come to meals unless we remind her.
Right. She wouldn't be eating, right, unless
right.
the meals were actually provided. So it's really how you look at all of the different kind of supportive services that come into play mm-hmm. when you're doing that. So it's really important to speak with a professional and really, mm-hmm. you know, somebody who understands the system to be able to kind of help navigate through that.
It's very hard to navigate. And in that case that I'm thinking of, the daughter was a lawyer, not in this field.
Right.
And she had a hard time navigating it herself.
Yeah.
And she needed help. So don't feel, you know, ashamed to ask for help with your insurance policy. It's really difficult
right.
to get those claims through.
Right. Well, and you know, just talking about insurance, Medicare is the same too. Like we have a client that we've been working with that's, the daughter's really been struggling with the different decisions to make. And so we finally got dad into assisted living. He had sort of an incident where he, you know, developed a UTI. So, of course, different right. things come with that. Went to the hospital and they were talking about, you know, there's not a long-term need for him to be in the hospital. And so, but he got to a point where he couldn't ambulate really well. And so we thought rehab would be a great idea. And she was like, well, he hasn't had 3 days. And I'm like, you need to call your insurance.
Yeah.
But I said, because a lot of insurance has eliminated that need for a 3-day stay.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, his Medicare plan, he doesn't require a 3-day stay. So they're able to get him into a rehab without that 3-day admission. So
that's why it's always good to talk to a professional, because you don't necessarily know all the ins and outs of these little,
right.
you know, kind of tricks there. It's not really a trick, but
right.
just knowing the details of the policy.
And if you want to talk to us, it's mm-hmm. as simple as picking up the phone and scheduling mm-hmm. an appointment.
That's right.
518-465-7581.
That's right. Enjoy the weekend. I hope the weather gets better.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.